This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Good morning and welcome to Medicine on Call. I'd like to welcome my guest today, Mr. Sean Parnell of the Self-Pay Patient. There's been a lot of drama with Obamacare over the past, several weeks, and it's just coming to a head. So I wanted to have Mr. Parnell come back on because I know he wrote a book recently, and it's all about strategy at this point. I think it's all about choice. Even though people in the who proponents of Obamacare want you to think there's no other choice but to fall in line and join one of these exchanges or go on healthcare.gov and give up all your personal information. But there is a third way, which is about free market and free market medicine, which is alive and well. And I think that's the antidote for this disaster. And I personally think it's not for people to wait for government to fix it, because they're not going to. It's up to us as individuals, doctors and patients, working together to make sure that we literally take our power back. And Mr. Parnell is all about that. So I want to welcome you today, Sean, to the show.
Well, thank you for having me on, Dr. George.
It's a pleasure to talk to you again. I've been following your progress with your book, and I've been sending people to your website. And I just want to thank you for all the really, really powerful work you've been doing. So give us an update. How's the book going?
Well, the book has been out since late December in both digital and paperback form, and I'm selling quite a few books. It turns out there's an awful lot of interest out there in finding a way to take control of your health care, to not allow government or insurance bureaucrats to play an unnecessarily large role in your health care. And, of course, there's an awful lot of people that are simply looking at Obamacare and saying, I don't want that. I do not want to be part of that system. And they're interested in finding ways to save money and make sure that the medical decisions are being made by them and their doctor, not a third party who's wielding the checkbook. And so I'm getting a lot of interest in the book, and I'm happy, of course, to come on shows like yours and talk with people about it.
Excellent. Now, you know, I've done a lot of research, and one of the things that I learned that I actually didn't know is the power of Medicare and Medicaid, once you're in those systems, to control your access to free market. Do you have anything that you can, you know, what have you learned about people on Medicare? Because I find that that's the group of people who I really want to help, but I'm handcuffed sometimes. I mean, as a physician, I know that if you opt out of Medicare, you cannot even have them submit their claim after you've seen them. How does a self-pay patient work for a Medicare patient?
Yeah, and that is unfortunately probably one of the toughest areas for self-pay patients, is if you're also covered under Medicare. I mean, basically, the way it is set up under Medicare is, as you mentioned, if a doctor wants to see a patient who, you know, just wants to pay cash for their treatment, then that doctor can't see any other Medicare patients for reimbursement. They're really tied up in terms of what they're able to do. And if you're somebody who's on Medicare, then your only option is to find a doctor that has opted out entirely if you want to pay for it. And while there are a growing number of doctors who have opted out of Medicare entirely, it is still a small number, and especially when you're looking at some of the specialties, you know, gerontology and cancer, those are things that Medicare patients are more likely to need than a lot of other people in the population, and it's really tough to find cash-only doctors in those specialties or some of the other more advanced specialties. There are primary care doctors out there, though, who have opted out entirely and are good options for Medicare patients, but there's no doubt that it's tough to be a self-paid Medicare patient.
Well, I want to be a little bit more specific about opting out entirely. What do you mean exactly? Either you don't sign up. I mean, every 2 years you have to opt out, otherwise they automatically re-enroll you. Are you talking about that type of opt-out? Are you talking about completely just removing yourself from the Medicare provider role?
Yeah, I'm talking about completely removing yourself from Medicare. If you're a doctor, and I'm a little hazy on some of these details, mm-hmm. there are people out there who know much more than I some of the intricate details. But as I understand it, if you're a doctor and you don't want to be part of Medicare, then you can opt out completely. But it does mean that your patients are not even going to be able to submit for any sort of reimbursement for any treatment that you provide. And, in fact, if a doctor does try and receive any sort of reimbursement from Medicare while at the same time accepting any cash payment from a Medicare patient, then they can lose their license and go to jail. I mean, the federal government is really, really very tough on mm-hmm. doctors that, frankly, try and treat patients the way patients want to be treated. And this goes back, if I remember correctly, to the early 1990s. It was some of the regulations that the Clinton administration came in, and they really tried to crack down on doctors that wanted to try and preserve that doctor-patient relationship while still seeing Medicare patients.
Now, how does Obamacare, I mean, I know that Obamacare really is Medicaid for all. That's what it's coming, that's what it's turning out to be. Are there any regulations that you're aware of people who do sign up for Obamacare that they can get out of this, the grid that they're in? Are they under the same constraints of, opting to see a cash pay physician, or do they have a little bit more power?
Well, actually, if you have a health insurance plan purchased through an Obamacare exchange or outside the exchange, you are still free to pay cash to see a doctor, particularly if you have a high deductible plan. One of the things that a lot of people have begun to notice is that the deductibles for the health insurance plans offered through the exchanges are fairly high, at least compared to what a lot of people are accustomed to. So if you buy a bronze level plan, let's say that has a $6,000 deductible, and you decide that the network of doctors that are available through that plan is too narrow, which is actually pretty common. Quite mm-hmm. a few of these health insurance plans, the reason that they're able to keep premiums down, keep them from only tripling instead of quadrupling under Obamacare, was to have very narrow networks. But if you purchase one of those bronze plans through Obamacare and you decide that you want to go see a doctor that's outside of the network and you just want to pay them cash, you're free to do so. There's no real regulatory barrier to that. Now, the challenge, of course, is that money spent might not qualify towards the deductible, mm-hmm. Which isn't going to be a problem for most people because so few people actually hit their deductibles anyways. But if you are have an Obamacare policy but want to pay cash for a particular procedure or to see a particular doctor, you can still do that. You still have the freedom to do that.
And in your opinion, with the bronze, the silver, platinum, I don't think anybody's really talked about the platinum plan. I wonder how much out of pocket that, or it's a gold plan, how much money out of pocket that is. If it's $6,000 out of pocket for the lowest rung plan, do you know what it is for the highest? If you learn, you just want to have a Cadillac Obamacare plan, what does that mean?
Right. And these are just some very rough averages, but broadly speaking, the bronze plans are around $5,000 to $6,000 for the deductibles. At the high end, the platinum plans, you're usually talking maybe $500 for a deductible. They are pretty generous. They're also very expensive, and my understanding is very few people are actually signing up for them. Most people do seem to be purchasing the silver plans. I think that's the most popular, followed by the bronze, which is actually a little bit of a surprise to me. I sort of thought that the bronze would be more popular, mm-hmm. but I suspect that that's a lot of people who had their old plans canceled and are now looking for comparable coverage and settling on the silver. But the gold and the platinum plans, there does not seem to be a lot of interest in those.
And, another thing that my producer wanted to ask, and I think it's a really good question, are you able to write this off in your taxes for the premiums and the out-of-pocket that you have to pay for these health plans?
No, the cost of your premiums are not tax deductible. Basically, the way it's sort of set up is, of course, if you're an employee and your employer provides you with insurance, that's tax deductible.
Mm-hmm.
And then the tax credits are supposed to sort of offset that if you're one of the people buying through the exchange who gets tax credits. But if you don't qualify for a tax credit and you're buying on the individual market, then you aren't able to deduct the premiums. There is, however, a provision that, and unfortunately, Obamacare raised this. It used to be if your medical expenses in any given year exceeded, I think it was 7.5% of your income,
yeah,
and everything above that could be deducted. Well, they raised that to 10%.
Right.
It was basically a little tax hike that was built in. Ironically enough, for a law that was supposed to help people afford their medical expenses, it was a tax hike on people who have really high medical expenses. If your medical expenses exceed 10%, then those are tax deductible. But again, most people are not going to wind up in that situation.
So yet another example of the supposedly Affordable Care Act being unaffordable, right?
I think that's a fair way to characterize
it. Very sad. So I wanted people to actually understand this, because if you watch TV or read about this, you have no idea what the inside ball of Obamacare is. They just, you know, the mantra, they want you to believe that everybody needs to do it. Everybody is joining it. They've signed up millions of people, and none of that's really true, is it? I mean, they've signed up people who've lost their health insurance and needed to go somewhere else, but people who weren't covered, I understand, were never covered, are still not signing up for this. Are you hearing that?
Yeah. It looks like at this point there's about 5 million people who have signed up through the exchange, but the overwhelming majority of those, anywhere from two-thirds to three-quarters, are, just as you said, people who previously had health insurance, and they're simply, their plans got canceled, or for whatever reason they decided to buy, their 2014 coverage on the exchange. My expectation at this point is that, there might be anywhere from 1.5 to 2 million people who have actually, were previously uninsured and are now gaining health insurance for the first time, or at least for the first time in a while. The Medicaid expansion, those numbers are also heavily inflated because a lot of the numbers that are being reported are simply people who are already on Medicaid and they're simply renewing their enrollment.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's people who were previously eligible for Medicaid even before Obamacare, and they are signing up. On that, I can't recall what the numbers are that they're talking about. I think it's like 7 or 8 million new Medicaid enrollees. And there again, there might be 2 or 3 million people who are actually getting new coverage as a result of Obamacare. I mean, my expectation when this is, when people are looking back at the end of 2014, is that the 45 to 50 million Americans who this law was allegedly supposed to help, the uninsured, this law might knock that number down by about 5 million, maybe.
That's all.
And I tell this to my friends who are in favor of Obamacare or some sort of national health care system. I just ask them the question, did you go through all of this trouble simply to knock the number of uninsured down from 50 million to 45 million? And usually when I ask them that question, they'll admit that, well, no, we were hoping to take it a lot further down. And, my expectation is that in 2017, 2018, an awful lot of people are going to look back at the whole Obamacare experience and say, I can't believe we put so much effort into so little result.
On that note, let's take a break. You're listening to Medicine on Call.
Come on, follow Sniffles to Atlanta's go-to center for breathing easy. Do you suffer from chronic sinus headaches, recurrent sinusitis, facial pain or pressure, and chronic congestion? Well, balloon sinuplasty just could be the cure you're looking for.
Follow me and breathe easy.
FollowSniffles.com. We treat the problem, not the symptom. Chronic sinus symptoms, gone. This could be the cure you're looking for.
Follow me and breathe easy.
This proven in-office procedure can have you breathing easy, back to work the next day, and it's done under local anesthesia. Get lasting relief, a quick recovery, and start breathing easy again.
Follow me and breathe easy.
FollowSniffles.com.
With all the back and forth in today's politics, it seems as though the Constitution gets lost in the mix. If you want to brush up on your Constitution, then join Michael Conley every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. for the show Our Constitution on AmericasWebRadio.com.
This is Dr. Elena George with your health tip of the day. Did you know that throat itching and tickling, nasal itching, eye itching, skin itching, eczema, and hives are all signs of allergy? A person suffering from allergy does not always have sneezing and a runny nose. If you have noticed that these symptoms are always present year-round, you may have allergies to what you are eating. Foods such as wheat, eggs, dairy products, and corn are present in most foods. Corn in particular is present in most processed foods and soft drinks in the form of high fructose corn syrup. Completely removing these foods from your diet for at least 2 months can in some cases stop the symptoms. Keeping a food diary or getting tested for food allergies is the fastest way to find out what foods are causing your symptoms. If you think you have a food allergy, it is important to see a doctor who specializes in the diagnosis and treatment of allergy. By rotating the food into the diet once every 2 weeks, allergies can be controlled and you can still eat the food.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. Today we have our guest, Mr. Sean Parnell of the Self-Pay Patient, and we're speaking about the nuts and bolts of Obamacare, not the drama, not the PR, but actually how this is really rolling out. And what you said in the first segment is pretty important that people need to understand this. You may actually have joined these exchanges. You may actually think you're covered under Obamacare, but you're not really getting anything for your money. Your panel of doctors is smaller. Most folks, or I should say most, I would say a lot of people, didn't sign up for the reality of having to pay more out of pocket. So you're paying a premium. You're paying minimum of $6,000 extra, and that's before the insurance kicks in. I mean, and to top it off, you have a third party deciding your health care. Since January 1st, I've been fighting more than I ever have for insurance companies telling me that what I want to do for my patient is medically not necessary. I've never gotten a letter like that before. It's been pre-certified. You know, you need to go through pre-certification. You know, send your notes in. You can sometimes bring it up, you know, the ladder to a doctor who's going to review it on the phone with you. Now we're getting letters of, we're not going to review anything. This is medically unnecessary. If you ask for a second look, you don't get it. I mean, I'm finding that it's become more of a hassle, more of an ingrained, we're not going to do it and we're not going to pay for it. And they're asking for money back. So after you've gone through the drama of it, after you've done the procedure, whatever, now they're sending you letters back saying, oh, we overpaid you. You know, this could be months later, and they're asking for a check. And if you're really unlucky and you're on an electronic deposit, they can just withdraw the money without even telling you. It's just done automatically. So I know from a doctor's standpoint, this is no picnic, and it's only gotten worse to be an advocate for my patient. What's your... And you said, and I'm surprised, in the break when you said you had friends who still are in favor of Obamacare, how could they be? And they know you. I just find that kind of interesting. How does that work? What are they thinking? I really want to get in their head because it doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, you know, I mean, it varies from person to person, of course, but for the most part, these aren't people that are actually part of Obamacare themselves. They have employer-provided coverage, and so their coverage hasn't really been affected by Obamacare yet. I think there's a lot of expectation that there'll be some pretty big changes at the end of this year for a lot of people. But I mean, it's just something where they look at it and say, well, you know, the uninsured need help. This is help, and that's about as deep as the thought process goes. And I mean, I'm, you know, somebody who's certainly in favor of making sure everybody has access to affordable care. But you know, I like to think at least that I took the time to learn a little bit about the subject and to understand that, you know, government-provided health care maybe shouldn't be the first option, mm-hmm. and that free markets are maybe a better way of doing that, simply allowing patients to go directly to the doctors if they want to and paying directly for their own care, which is a lot less expensive than the insurance system. And it preserves the doctor-patient relationship. And, you know, one of the benefits to that as well is that it eliminates the patient's aggravation with insurance companies and the pre-approvals and the denials. You know, I have mentioned a couple of times, maybe not on your show, but elsewhere, that my wife suffers from very, very severe migraines. And at this point, or over the last couple of years, I mean, I would say that a good number of her migraines have been triggered simply by her having to deal with and argue with her insurance company over whether or not they will cover the treatments that her doctors say she needs to prevent migraines. I mean, it's just insane the degree to which third-party payers are able to dictate what sort of medicine will be practiced. And I don't want to beat up too much on the insurance companies because they are in a tough spot. I mean, they do have to, you know, try and keep costs down and such. But the decisions that they make a lot of times are, frankly, indefensible and simply, you know, to me, demonstrate that patients usually are going to be much better off if, rather than running their health care through a third-party payer, they just pay directly for it. And there are insurance mechanisms, there are ways that people, you know, most people can't afford to pay out-of-pocket for, you know, a triple bypass surgery. But there are ways that you can do that, and this is one of the things I talk about in my book, Self-Pay Patient, but there are ways to get alternative types of insurance, alternative types of coverage that continue to keep the doctor-patient relationship, that eliminate that third-party interference while still protecting people from having to, you know, come up with $35,000 for that heart bypass surgery or whatever the case may be.
Well, I'm going to you to go into more detail with that, but I'm going to make one statement. I will beat up on the insurance companies because they are absolute crony, you know, beneficiaries of this entire system. And within the Obamacare guidelines, they're going to be give them a bailout so they don't lose money. They can lose up to $250,000, I think, per patient. But then after that, it's gravy. So they stand and they have no – who else can – they feel there's nowhere else you can go, so you've got this captive audience. I have no sympathy for them at all. If they can pay their CEOs millions of dollars while they deny somebody care, or cancer care, a medication like your wife, which is pennies compared to what their CEO makes – they're unconscionable. They're unethical and immoral, in my opinion. So I'm not going to give them a pass at all. I don't even want to deal with those people. And I wonder what happens to them when they get sick. I bet you they don't go through the same thing that you and I do. So from that standpoint, instead of getting on my soapbox for like 1 minute and vent, but talk about that. I mean, a triple bypass. A pastor was online yesterday talking about how he has now a $450,000 bill from covered by Obamacare, paid his installments from October when it first went online, had a heart attack in, I think, December, thought he was covered but actually wasn't, and now has a $450,000 bill. So he played the game. He thought he had signed up. He did everything right, and he's still getting hosed. How do people work around this system? Because that's a really huge ticket item that scares the pants off of people. It makes them say to themselves, if I don't have health coverage, I'm going to die. So tell us how we can work this so that we're not spending that kind of money.
Sure. You're talking about the gentleman out in Nevada that actually I read about him
Nevada,
as well
yes.
yesterday. And yeah, he had paid his insurance premiums through the exchange, and he's got all the evidence to prove it, and the exchange somehow never transmitted his information to the insurer, and so everybody's looking around saying, oh, well, we don't owe this $407,000, and so the patient does. And, yeah, that's a pretty horrific situation. The first thing to keep in mind about that $407,000 bill is that although that's the number that is listed, and unfortunately due to hospital billing practices, that is the number that a lot of uninsured people will wind up getting, the actual, you know, in a market, the price for that is almost certainly going to be an awfully lot less. What hospitals do is they have what are called charge master prices, and these are wildly inflated prices for the services that they provide that have no real bearing on reality. So a hip replacement surgery that Medicare might pay, you know, $28,000 for, or something in that range, their so-called charge master list price might be $110,000. I mean, it's just a frankly a fake price. It's a fake number that they put down on their charge master so that then they can go to the insurance companies and say, oh, we're going to give you a 73% discount off of our charge master price. So, you know, you at Blue Cross Blue Shield, every time we do this surgery for one of your patients, we're only going to charge you $33,000 or whatever the number is.
Mm-hmm.
So my guess would be that the gentleman who got hit with the $407,000 bill is that if he were to be charged sort of, you know, the standard reimbursement rates, the rates that a United or a Aetna might pay, his bill, you know, might be in the $80,000 to $100,000 range, which is still an awful lot. But that's, you know, a lot better than $407,000. And there are actually, and this is one of the things I cover in my book, The Self-Pay Patient, there are companies out there that are medical bill negotiation services. And you can go to them and basically, you know, show them their bill, and they know how this game is played with the hospitals. And they will go to the hospital and say, look, you're trying to charge my client $407,000. I know that if, you know, somebody from Blue Cross Blue Shield walked in with this bill, that total would only be $80,000. So will you take $80,000 from my client? And a lot of times hospitals will say sure, because they, you know, they, one, they don't want the bad publicity usually, mm-hmm. and two, they have policies in place to write down their wildly inflated prices. And so a lot of times when you're hit with those massive bills, the first thing to do is to try and get that down to the, you know, a more realistic price, which is with the medical billing negotiator, something that's not that difficult to do. The second thing, of course, is, you know, I mean, $80,000, that's still an awful lot of money. But you can buy insurance policies that will pay you money. They're sort of based on the life insurance model. They will pay you cash when you have a certain medical event or diagnosis, and that includes cancer or heart attack or stroke, which can be very expensive things. And you can select the level of the payout. So, for example, you know, the average cancer treatment in America, I was looking at some information a couple of months ago, usually the true charges it's going to be, you know, $35,000 to $40,000 to be treated for cancer. Now, it can be an awful lot more, especially if you're, you know, depending on the drug regimen that you're on. But you can buy a insurance policy that will just write you a check, cash, for $50,000, $75,000, $100,000 if you get diagnosed with one of these illnesses or, you know, have a heart attack. And that money can then be used to simply pay for your treatment. One of the things I like about these policies is, one, they're very inexpensive. You know, somebody like myself, a 43-year-old male, I might be able to get a policy that would pay, you know, $100,000 if I get diagnosed with cancer, mm-hmm. or have a stroke. I I might be able to get a policy for $100,000 that might cost me $50, $60, $70 a month, which is an awful lot better than, you know, maybe a $300, $400, $500 a month policy under Obamacare. And, of course, the other thing is because you have the cash in your hand to pay for your treatment, you don't have to go to the doctor that the insurance company tells you to. You can go to any doctor in the country that, you know, you think is going to best meet your treatment needs. So that is one of the things that people can do to avoid this third-party payer system. And when you, you know, obviously you can't buy an insurance policy like that after you have the heart attack. But if you sort of plan ahead and be prepared for catastrophic medical expenses, then it's not that difficult to find sort of an alternative structure that will meet your health care needs, but that exists outside of the conventional third-party payer system.
Excellent idea. On that note, let's take a break. You're listening to Medicine on Call.
This is Dr. Elena George with your health tip of the day. Did you know that dizziness may be a sign of heart disease, iron deficiency, high or low blood pressure, low blood sugar, or an inner ear infection? Dizziness can take the form of a spinning sensation, also known as vertigo, or a feeling of lightheadedness. The individual can also feel faint or have a rapid heartbeat. If you take high blood pressure medication, remember to take the medication daily as directed to control your blood pressure. Diabetics must remember to eat after taking their medication and to eat at regular intervals. If you have anemia, make sure to take a multivitamin that contains iron and to eat vegetables such as spinach. Dizziness after a cold or flu may be due to a virus. If you have dizziness, it is important to see your doctor for a complete physical examination. Please join me Wednesdays at 9 a.m. for Medicine on Call. This is Dr. Elena George.
This is Michael Gannot with the Middle East Research Center Limited, bringing you insight to Israel, the truth about the greatness of the Jewish state and its struggle for sovereignty and security, every Sunday at 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
Come on, follow Sniffles to Atlanta's go-to center for breathing easy. Do you suffer from chronic sinus headaches, recurrent sinusitis, facial pain or pressure, and chronic congestion? Well, balloon sinuplasty just could be the cure you're looking for.
Follow me and breathe easy.
Follow Sniffles.com. We treat the problem, not the symptom. Chronic sinus symptoms, gone. This could be the cure you're looking for.
Follow me and breathe easy.
This proven in-office procedure can have you breathing easy, back to work the next day, and it's done under local anesthesia. Get lasting relief, a quick recovery, and start breathing easy again.
Follow me and breathe easy.
Follow Sniffles.com.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. Prior to the break, Mr. Parnell was giving us really excellent strategies on how to control our own medical purse strings. And I had a question for you about the hospital side of this. You mentioned they have their charge master and they can just make stuff out of whole cloth. Why is that legal? If they're taking money from the government, they're taking Medicaid, Medicare dollars, they're, I would think, completely regulated. They're making up charges. Is that not fraud that you can charge a self-pay patient one thing, an insurance company another thing? We could not get away with that as physicians. How do they do that?
Well, legally speaking, the government, of course, sets the rates that they will pay hospitals through Medicaid and Medicare. And the hospitals do operate somewhat, at least in this particular area, in a free market, in that, you know, businesses and companies are allowed to set their prices however they want. The curiosity or the oddity, of course, is that very few people actually pay those prices because they give these massive discounts. But it's, you know, one of the features of our capitalist economy that I actually, you know, favor, is that entities are allowed to set their own prices, even if those prices are, frankly, insane. The problem is not that hospitals are allowed to set their own prices, from my perspective. The problem is that there's then no or a very small actual market that disciplines those prices. Because if we actually had a free market in healthcare where, let's say, you know, insurance companies went to patients and said, oh, okay, you need a hip replacement surgery, here's $30,000, you can go wherever you want. Mm-hmm. Then hospitals, and this actually happened in California when CalPERS, their retiree system out there, did this, then if you had that sort of a system, then hospitals would, of course, automatically start dropping their prices to something rational and sane, and some of them might be, you know, more than $30,000 because they offer better quality. It might be $35,000, and the patient would be expected to come up with the rest of that because they want the better quality or convenience or whatever, and that would be perfectly fine. So the problem isn't so much that hospitals are allowed to set their own prices. It's that the consumers, the patients, aren't the, you know, the offsetting force that they are in most other markets, where if somebody puts out a crazy price, then they say, well, okay, I'm not going there then.
Right.
So that's sort of my take on it, that the lack of consumer purchasing power, those forces don't act as a restraint on crazy hospital prices.
That's an excellent point. So it's all about transparency. So like for the center, the Surgery Center of Oklahoma, where all their prices are online,
yes.
I had Dr. Smith on a couple of weeks ago, and what's going on in their city is that the hospitals are now dropping their price because people know what a cost is, and they're like, can you meet it or beat it? And there's real competition. And I think people get into the capitalism is not fair mantra because it's not capitalism, it's cronyism. The fact that you can have hospitals make deals with the government, they don't put their prices online, they're not really competing with anybody because they've already monopolized the healthcare access in various cities. I know for us in Georgia, we've seen just mega hospitals mushroom and the community hospitals are being Pac-Man'd or closed. And so that you don't really have a big choice. It's about three different systems, maybe four, in Georgia right now, and they're colluding with each other to get bigger. So how do we, I mean, I honestly, what you just said is the key to me to breaking this crony system up. It's whoever controls the purse strings controls the power of access. And it used to be the doctor and the patient. Now it's not so much. So before the break, you were talking to us about supplemental. It sounds like Aflac type of strategy. Is that my take on that correct? Or is there something outside of Aflac that you can buy from, I don't know, any other insurance company?
Yeah, I mean, Aflac is one of the companies that sells those types of policies that will write you cash for a diagnosis. There are a number of others. I think Reserve National is another one, Mutual of Omaha, and there are a variety of, and they are generally thought of as supplemental policies, but depending on the level of coverage that you select, they can actually be used as your primary health insurance. And getting back real quickly to what you were talking about with, you know, in Georgia there only being a couple of large hospital systems, and the smaller hospitals, community hospitals, are struggling or even closing down. One thing to understand about Obamacare is, under the law, that's a feature, not a bug. It is the intent of the law, one of the intents of the law, to basically drive consolidation and mergers and get, you know, sort of independent operators out because, you know, for central planners, having lots of different individual entities, that's messy. If you only have a couple of large entities that you need to regulate and control, that's a lot easier. So closing down hospitals, forcing private practices to be bought out by hospitals, that's a feature, not a bug, under Obamacare. So back to the supplemental policies, the benefit is, just as you were saying, that they do keep the consumer in charge, and that then sort of helps to offset that. It does give people a way out of those large consolidated systems so that they can go to somebody like Dr. Smith in Oklahoma, or they can go overseas as a medical tourist. I have a friend who, she recently got bariatric surgery. She was looking around here in the U.S., and she was getting prices of $30,000, $35,000, and she could not afford that. Mm-hmm. But it turns out that, and she's a sort of a world traveler, and so going to another country is not something that's terribly frightening for her. She was able to get her surgery in India for, I think, $7,000.
Seven?
Seven, yes.
Wow.
And, the prices of care overseas are much more affordable quite frequently. And the quality of care, if you do your homework and, make sure you're going to a reputable establishment, the quality can be quite high as well. It's not some guy who opened a surgical theater in his basement or something in Bangalore. These are first-class hospitals that, for a variety of reasons, are just able to offer care at much lower rates than what you can get here in the U.S.
Do you have, in your book, do you list countries that you or hospitals that you would recommend?
I don't actually recommend hospitals per se, but I do have in my book, The Self-Pay Patient, a number of medical tourism companies that operate here in the U.S., and that what they do is they facilitate traveling overseas. And, depending on the person, I would generally recommend that they work through a facilitator as opposed to trying to do this on their own. Because the medical tourism company is going to be able to sort of explain a lot of things to you that on your own, just might not occur to you. I mean, what does going across the international date line and a time change, how does that affect your surgery and your recovery?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people aren't necessarily going to think of that. And I've talked with some people in the industry, the medical tourism companies, they know all of this stuff. They know the ins and the outs, and then they're able to explain to you, okay, this is what you need to be prepared for. Understand that in these countries, the air conditioning is not part of what they do, and that's a reality in some countries. And if you're going to India in the wintertime, that might not be a problem. If you're going there in August, that might be a problem. So those are the sorts of things that they know about, and they can talk with you and get you matched up with the right hospital and the right doctor.
Got you. Now, when we come back from the break, I want to get into the more specifics about young people, what their strategy should be. We talked about the Medicare, the seniors, and it sounds to me that they need a supplemental policy that would be the most cost-effective and give them some options, would it not?
I think that a supplemental policy would definitely preserve a lot of options and give them a lot more freedom to see the providers that they want to without interference by Medicare bureaucrats, yeah.
I think that's a good idea. On that note, let's take a small break and return and talk more and get in more detail. You're listening to Medicine on Call.
Come on, follow Sniffles to Atlanta's go-to center for breathing easy. Do you suffer from chronic sinus headaches, recurrent sinusitis, facial pain or pressure, and chronic congestion? Well, balloon sinuplasty just could be the cure you're looking for.
Follow me and breathe easy.
Follow sniffles.com. We treat the problem, not the symptom. Chronic sinus symptoms, gone. This could be the cure you're looking for.
Follow me and breathe easy.
This proven in-office procedure can have you breathing easy, back to work the next day, and it's done under local anesthesia. Get lasting relief, a quick recovery, and start breathing easy again.
Follow me and breathe easy.
Follow sniffles.com.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
This is Dr. Elena George with your health tip of the day. Did you know that wellness and prevention is the key to living a long and healthy life? For example, common diseases such as acid reflux, high cholesterol, non-insulin-dependent diabetes, and high blood pressure, in some cases, are caused by poor nutrition. Scientific studies suggest the use of nutritional supplements, a healthy diet, and exercise can control and, in some cases, prevent disease. Use nutritional supplements that are formulated using good manufacturer practice standards. And remember to let your doctor know what you are taking, since it can react with prescription medication. Please join me Wednesdays at 9 a.m. for Medicine on Call. This is Dr. Elena George.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. And remember, we're going to talk about more detailed strategies. We talked about the seniors. What about the young people, the people who are just starting out and hopefully have a first job? And what are their, I mean, I know that they're not signing up for Obamacare, so that's pretty smart right off the bat. But what can they do that's going to be cost-effective, proactive, and not put them in at harm's way by spending money in a system that's going to work against them?
You know, the young people, you're right. The numbers so far suggest that they really aren't signing up for Obamacare in large numbers. My own personal take on that is that I think it's important for everybody to have some form of coverage, including young people. I don't suggest going bare. I tell a story that I had a 22-year-old college roommate who was diagnosed with testicular cancer our senior year. So young people do get, come down with serious medical needs. That said, of course, I don't necessarily think that a Obamacare policy or a standard health insurance policy is the right choice for everybody, and particularly young people who don't have usually much in the way of medical needs. The supplemental policies actually would be a good option. Mm-hmm. My college roommate, had he had a supplemental policy, he was covered under his mother's policy at the time, but if he'd had a supplemental policy instead for $20,000 or whatever it was that his treatment cost, then, you know, he would have had the money to go see any provider he wanted to. He would have been fine. And, again, the cost on that for a 20-year-old to buy a supplemental policy with, say, a $50,000 payout, I mean, you're talking $15, $20, $25 a month, which is a fraction of what Obamacare would be charging them. So supplemental policies remain a good strategy. Another really interesting one is short-term health insurance. And these are policies that typically last a couple of months or 6 months or even up to 364 days. They can't go 365, that's a full year, and that sort of drags them into the same regulatory structure that Obamacare has captured all the other health insurance policies under. But if you elect to buy a short-term policy, then that will provide you, you know, fairly standard coverage. It will not cover a lot of the things that, frankly, a lot of people are finding in Obamacare that they don't need. 22-year-old males do not need maternity coverage, generally speaking. And the prices tend to be much less expensive because they don't have to offer all of the stuff mandated by Obamacare. So the essential health benefits aren't part of the mix. The deductibles can be higher, which if you're a young person, can be a pretty good deal in that you're probably not going to, have a major medical event, but in the event you do have some coverage there that will pay for, that cancer treatment or skiing accident or what have you. Generally, depends on the policy, but again, you might be anywhere from 30% to 40% to 50% of the price of an Obamacare policy, so it's much more affordable. And then a third option that young people might want to take a look at would be joining a healthcare sharing ministry. Mm-hmm. These are organizations. There's five of them that I'm aware of. Four of them are only for Christians. One of them accepts anybody who will agree with their sort of statement on religious liberty. But basically, these operate, they're voluntary associations of individuals who agree to share their medical bills among each other. they operate in some ways like insurance companies. They offer coverage that might be considered fairly comparable, again, at a much lower rate because they are not regulated under Obamacare. They don't have to cover a lot of the things that insurance does under Obamacare. And so you get, you know, roughly similar levels of protection from the catastrophic medical event at a fraction of the cost. So those are some of the things that if you're, you know, 25, 30, even maybe 35 years old and you're looking at the prices on Obamacare for insurance and saying, wow, that's way too much or that's just not a good deal, those are some of the options that I think they might want to be looking at.
I'm going to ask you two questions. One, and it's probably in the back of people's minds, let's say you have one of these supplemental insurance policies and God forbid you need to access it. Is it a one-off or you just, no matter how many times you need to access it, it will cover you, meaning that you can't be dropped?
Right. My understanding is that these are one-offs because they're based on sort of a life insurance type of model, and of course you only die once. So it is a one-time thing, and depending on what it is that happened, you know, after your cancer diagnosis and you get treated for it, you know, you might wind up going back to a standard insurance policy under Obamacare through your employer. That's one of the things about the sharing ministries that I think are great is that, you know, they aren't one-offs. If you get diagnosed with cancer this year, then, you know, get hit by a bus 3 years later, you're still covered. Your rates aren't going to change. You're not going to be tossed out. It continues.
Got you. And for something, I mean, that on TV, Aflac talks about, and I've seen patients who've come to my office where it seems like there's more than one, it's not a one-off. If you have a colonoscopy, they'll cut you a check for that. If you have, you know, a hernia operation, they'll cut you a check for that. It's based on the diagnosis. That's different than the catastrophic coverage that you just described, correct?
Generally, yes. I mean, the thing is that there are a lot of different companies that offer these different types of policies, and so they all have their own nuances. Mm. But yes, I mean, there are policies like the fixed benefit policies that will, you know, sort of repeatedly pay out. The critical illness policies, which are the ones for stroke and heart attack and cancer diagnosis, those tend to be the one-off ones, whereas other supplemental policies like the Aflac, that'll pay for a colonoscopy and then will pay for the, you know, overnight stay in the hospital, you know, a year later. Those tend to be a little bit more of a standard insurance policy renewable.
Gotcha. Now, we have about 6 minutes left to the show, and we talked about the seniors, we talked about the young people. What about those of us who are in the middle? So we're not, you know, spring chickens anymore, but we're not yet ready for Medicare. What do you advise people in 30-plus, 40-plus, 50-ish range? What should people there do?
Well, again, it really depends on the individual needs of the person. So, for example, you know, whether or not a person has children is going to be a pretty significant, you know, point in making the decision. You know, your health history is also going to play into it. But generally speaking, I tend to favor the sharing ministries and the short-term policies for people who are in the middle. And also, you know, if you want to go outside the exchange and get a high deductible policy that's offered, you know, by United or Cross Blue Shield or something like that, or for that matter within the exchange, I mean, high deductible policies are certainly better than low deductible policies in terms of the premium. Mm-hmm. You, of course, do give up a lot of the freedom that self-pay patients have in terms of being able to pick their doctors, and so that's a downside. I mean, my main advice is to have some form of coverage, whether that's a high deductible policy or a critical illness and accident insurance combination or membership at a sharing ministry. In my particular case, I've joined a sharing ministry at the start of the year. I decided that I, you know, didn't want to be part of Obamacare, and so I'm out of there.
Thank goodness.
So I joined a ministry, and that was the right choice for me. But everybody's going to have to sort of weigh it on their own. The thing that I really emphasize in my book, Self-Pay Patient, is that it should be an individual who decides what sort of coverage is best for them and what the trade-offs are that they're willing to accept, not the, you know, the government and one-size-fits-all, you know, basically saying, okay, here's your bronze option, here's your silver option, and you know, here's your platinum option. Pick one of these. You know, that's the sort of thing that I tend to reject, and I think you do as well.
Absolutely.
And so what I really just focus on is making sure that people are aware that there are alternatives and options out there to Obamacare and conventional insurance.
I'm going to ask you a provocative question, and, you know, you know, I have to do that. And we don't have a lot of time, so I want you to just give me the meat of it. Do you think that this is becoming a two-tier system where those people who can afford to control their own purse strings economically and you know, access self-pay health care, free market health care, are they getting better health care than those who stick with insurance?
I think that the answer is yes in a lot of cases. Obviously, I mean, if somebody is truly destitute, then you know, maybe the Obamacare policy is going to be their best option. But broadly speaking, I think that somebody who makes the sort of decisions that I have and that I outline in my book, I think they're going to get a much better quality of care because they're going to be going to you know, a cash-only doctor where, again, the third-party payer is eliminated. It's just the doctor and the patient in that exam room making the medical decisions. They're going to have better access to their doctor, generally speaking. They're going to save a lot of money, usually. And they're going to, you know, have the freedom to get the medical treatment that they want, not that the government or an insurance company thinks that they should get. So, yeah, I mean, I do think that we are moving towards, and this has been the case for a long time, actually. Corporate CEOs have always had their platinum type of plans that gave them instant access to their doctors. But the interesting thing about being a self-pay patient is that, by and large, it is something that is accessible and available to people of far, far more modest means, middle income, upper, lower income. I mean, none of the strategies or the things that I talk about in the book are things that are that can only be taken advantage of by wealthy people. And in fact, a lot of them are options that are geared specifically towards people who are trying to save money, who are looking at that, you know, $500 a month insurance bill that Obamacare would stick them with, and, you know, deciding, you know, maybe we'll do the $300 a month or the $200 a month membership in a sharing ministry. Maybe we'll go to a direct primary care practice, and that'll be cheaper than going through, you know, the insurance policy that we can get on the exchange. So that's actually, I think, one of the exciting things about the sort of developing two-tier system is that it's not so much based on income. It's just based on a person's willingness to step outside of the box and take control of their health care and get better care and save money in the process.
On that note, I want to thank you, Sean, for joining me today. This is Sean Parnell of The Self-Pay Patient, www.theselfpaypatient.com, and that's the best way to reach him, I think. And, Sean, I hope you'll come back in the future.
I would be happy to.
Have a great day.
You too.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.